thank you very much for inviting me. What I'm going to do for the next 30 or 40 minutes is try to give you an idea of something one of you might be interested in looking at as a kind of hobby or on the side. When you see how amateur my attempt is to look at this, I hope it spurs you on to do this, but also I don't think what I've done is unusual. I think this area of looking at global trends, we assume that people who are very, very clever are looking at this and are doing a good job of it, and in short, they are not. It's an area which is seen as too complicated to understand, but it's very important. So I'm going to talk about fertility rates, the number of babies people are having, something about infant survival and what's currently happening with that. And that's very interesting when you're talking about people using the internet, because the internet's now being used to log the birth of babies in Africa. One effect may be to overestimate how many babies are being born in Africa, or overestimate the rise, because lots of babies' births were not being recorded. So we now think that there's been a big increase in births. There may not have been. That's connected to the Gates Foundation, which are paying people to vaccinate every last baby, which is very good. But if it also results in you thinking that you're getting more babies, it's bad, because then people worry about too many babies. And I'm going to talk about the population trends for the whole planet, how many people we expect there to be, which matters a lot. It gets into all of our kind of fears about people and our worries about people. And now's a good day to talk about being worried about people, because most of Europe has expressed its increased worry about people, and particularly about immigration, in the last 3 or 4 days. We've also had austerity around Europe. In England, where I come from, one effect of austerity has been the introduction of what we call the bedroom tax. If you live in England, and Scotland and Wales and Northern Ireland, but they're changing the rules in some of those countries, and you live in social housing, that is housing paid for by the government, and they decide that you have a spare room, you can now be taxed, if it's 2 rooms, up to £25 a week for having the spare rooms, which you can't afford, because the only reason you're in the social housing is because you have no spare money. So this is causing huge amounts of distress at the moment. These are the people who are most efficiently housed in the country. If one of your children dies, you can be evicted from your home because you're not occupying the bedroom. And so this quote is about a mother saying that people may start to have children simply so they can stay in their home. And it shows the kind of worry and the kind of things that are going on. Here's a quote from 180 years ago. These kind of worries about people and population have been going on a long time, and changes to laws about who would be assisted and so on were affected by worries about people having children. The reason I think we should look at this very differently now is that quite dramatic things have been happening around the world to do with how many children people have, and a lot of our thinking still heads back to the 1960s and 70s, when population growth was completely out of control, and it takes time to catch up with what's happened since the 1960s and 1970s. Here is to show I've got some kind of structure to the talk. So I'll let you read that because it's too many words for me, but there is a plan to this. But I'm really going to waffle around, because my real intention is to try to show you this is interesting, and anybody can get a spreadsheet and begin to look at it. Now, I'd rather it wasn't just anybody. I wish it was people who were used to dealing with numbers and used to dealing with these kind of issues, but may have become specialised in epidemiology to look at one thing that's quite narrow, very, very well. And you could take your skills and what you can do and just look at this wider question better than a geographer can. So I'll go forward. Two books that these slides come from. This little one here, The No-Nonsense Guide to Equality, is where the slides about inequality and fertility come from. And last year I produced this book called Population 10 Billion. The publisher added the dramatic subtitle. that wasn't my idea, but they have to sell books. They also, if you look, the thing I like most is they did the cover. And if you look very carefully, you'll see there are at least three different sexual positions. There, you have to look carefully to see it. Because this is what this is about. Annoyingly, about 2 weeks before the book was published, this is last year, the United Nations decided to increase its estimate for the human population by the end of the century to 11 billion. but this shows how little we know. A few years earlier, as I'll show you, it was 9 billion. So we went 9, 10, 11 in less than 10 years. We have no idea. The United Nations are a nice little set of people sitting in a room in New York doing the estimates, less people than are in this room now. There is not a great body of expertise producing these numbers. They apply a set model. And if Bill Gates pays people to register the birth of babies in Africa, and we think the number of babies in Africa is suddenly going up, these people's models will suddenly say there's going to be 11 billion of us. Here are the projections for you. I'm sorry it's fairly small, but I'll go through them for you. This was the old projection, the projection that existed around about 2003, 2004 onwards, when the UN for the first time went forward to 2300. It's quite good they were made to go forward to 2300, because it meant you have to check the plausibility of their models and they have to produce something that wasn't ridiculous. They were made to go forward this far by the climate change modellers, who wanted to have an estimate of how many people there would be to try to work out how much carbon we would produce. And at this stage, so this is the revision in 2004, there are supposed to be 9 billion people by 2050, heading up to a maximum of 9.1 and then settling on 9 eventually. They have two other projections, the low projection and the high projection. Everybody talks about the high projection. Nobody ever talks about the low projection. But the low projection is looking more and more realistic. And to give you an idea about how unsophisticated these are, all the low projection is what would happen if every woman in the world had half a baby less. It's a strange idea, but half a baby less. And the high projection is what would happen if every woman in the world had half a baby more. That is as sophisticated as the United Nations population projections, which everybody relies on, get. In 2011, they released new statistics. And this is interesting because they stopped suddenly at 2100. We're only trying to predict forward 80-odd years. There is no longer any official world projection that goes further than 84 years forward. This is us. This is human beings. This isn't something more complicated than us. It's just us. They upped the projection for the end of the century from 9.1 to 10.1 billion, an extra billion people. The high projection goes to almost 16 billion in just 84 years. The low projection went to 6.1 billion. So they're all increased. And then they added this thing. This thing is constant. This thing is, if we carry on having babies at the rate we're having them today meaning 2011, this is what will happen. And you can immediately see why they didn't go forward. Because it would go up. There was a beautiful study done around about 1968, and I'll show you some graphs from then a bit later, when a mathematician worked out that if we carried on reproducing at the rate we were doing, I was born in 1968, so this interests me, if we carried on reproducing at the rate at which people like me were being reproduced, then within 300 years, the planet would be a seething mass of bodies, with every body touching each other. Now, the mathematician who produced that was saying something quite subtly. He was saying, this is not going to continue. He was saying, we were at a particular high point and it was going to change. But the demographers in the 1960s and 70s just said, this is out of control and we're going to get famine and war and so on. Here's the basic relationship between how much money people have, median income on a log scale, and the average number of children that women have in their lifetime. And essentially it's like this. So as countries get richer, people tend to have fewer children. When countries are poor, Niger's always the example given now, people tend to have 6 to 8 children. We may have had 6 to 8, maybe less children for a very long time. There's lots of interesting work done about how many children we had 10 or 20,000 years ago. It's highly speculative. It may have been slightly less than that. We may have actually controlled our fertility. And of course, many of these children died, so it was fairly stable. But this is the basic relationship. But I want to show you another one in a second. Okay. Have any of you seen the Hans Rosling graphics? Okay. He's great, isn't he? He can do it. I'm afraid I'm going backwards with my graphics. When I was here in 2005, I had lovely, colourful graphics, and you'll see I'm heading towards black and white. But if I flick very quickly between that and that, I can pretend I'm Hans at some point. So this is a Hans Rosling graphic from the 1960s, and you can see most of the world ran about 6 or 7 babies per woman, and a few rich countries down here, but still almost all above 2. And then we go forward to now, and you have this incredible change where most of the world, this is India and China, is under 3 children, maybe under 2 children, just a few countries there. It's an absolutely remarkable change that's happened worldwide. It's almost certainly to do with female emancipation. Yet again, I'm speaking to an audience. Can you put your hands up if you're male? Come on, just like so, you know, I should have to tell. Okay, so what that? Is that a quarter of you? Yeah? Right, this is female emancipation. Worldwide. People who were subhuman 100 years ago are suddenly the majority in the room I'm talking to. We could talk about why or what, and people call it education and so on, but it's a sea change in what it means to be human. Now, here's the same graph I showed you earlier, but instead of showing you income, I'm going to show you income inequality. So here we've got the most unequal countries. I think my measure is how much more the best off 10th for people have than the worst off 10th. And here we have the more equal countries. So Japan is the most equal country probably in the world, a large country. Sierra Leone and Brazil are very unequal. And you'll see a relationship here that people tend to have fewer children when they become more equal. Now the two things are very related. Income equality is a characteristic of rich countries. You could even argue it's quite hard to become a rich country without having made your income distribution a bit more equal. By the way, I should tell you, you're twice as equal as England. You may not realise that, but the ratios in Switzerland are half what they are in England. Your bankers are paid half as much as our bankers in real terms. We have 2,194 bankers in London paid more than €1 million a year, more than the rest of Europe put together. And our minimum wage is around about £6 an hour. You didn't vote to put yours up to the equivalent of 15, but you thought about it. But essentially you have an income distribution which is half the inequalities that we have, but still double what they have, say, in the Netherlands. So there's a huge variation. My most complicated graph, so I'll spend a couple of minutes on this and then I'll zoom forward. The colours are to do with average income worked out per day. So the white bars are rich countries, the black bars are poor countries, and you can see the black bars have the highest numbers of babies. That's the numbers of babies per woman again. This is the inequality distribution. These are the most equal countries. And you'll see in general they tend to, you don't have any poor country that's pretty equal, but in general the more equal countries tend to have fewer babies. As you head towards the more unequal ones, you'll see that the bars appear to be going up. So it's an interaction between these two things. The thinking behind this, or what's going on, is that as a country becomes richer, the need to have children produces, you get social security systems, you get pensions. If you don't have pensions, you have to have children, more children. Otherwise, who's going to look after you when you're old? But similarly, in a rich country that's more equal, there are fewer people who are poor enough to actually need to have three or four children to look after them when they're old. The other thing that happens is that what is normal changes. Whether it's normal, I was one of four children, that wasn't that unusual in the 1960s. It's now normal here to have about two. If you have a three, you're looking a bit profligate. You know, like, you're a little bit greedy, I have three, so I'm not having a go at anybody. But the Greens might even say you're going to damage the planet with your three children. Two is kind of normal, and one is much more normal than it used to be. And we're tipping in many quite rich countries between two and one. Let's do one more poll. How many of you are only children? Only children. Okay, so how many have got one sibling? Great. How many have got three siblings? Sorry, two siblings. Yep, now you are looking older, on average. how many have got three or more siblings? So like me. Wow. So there's just four of us. You see the change? Yep. And we're getting this shift. In Japan and a few other countries, it's really interesting to watch the one child becoming very, very normal. And that's a switch, because when I grew up, it was not normal to be an only child. We could get to a point where it's not normal to have a sibling. And you might be better at making friends if you're an only child than if you have a sibling. But that's a relationship I think needs to be looked at more closely. It's not as simple as that. I failed to put a graph in I should have put in, but I can describe it to you. The average age of having children in England 100 years ago was around about 30. It came down to around about age 22 when we were most equal in the 1970s. And now it's back up again at 30. One of the reasons why it was 30 in the past 100 years ago is that the most common job for a woman in England was to be a servant. And the one thing you were not allowed to do if you were a servant, particularly if you lived in the house of the people you were a servant for, was have children. The average age came down, but also the number of children came down. The average age is now up to 30, which is the European average. But again, people talk about not being able to afford to have children. And across Europe, and it will matter to here as well, people talk about giving people guest worker status, where they're allowed to come and live and work in a country, but they're not allowed to have their children in that country. And that's a form of inequality increasing, but people actually having potentially fewer children. Although they'll often end up having the child outside of the country and the grandmother looks after the child. The most interesting country in the world for that is Singapore, just as an aside. Singapore is the country in the world which has the lowest infant mortality rate in the world and doesn't boast about it. And maybe this is more direct if you want something to look at from the point of view of epidemiology. Why does the country with the lowest infant mortality rate in the world not boast about it? Because Singapore knows how it gets the lowest infant mortality rate in the world. There are at least 100,000 maids in Singapore. They used to be pregnancy tested every 6 months. They're now pregnancy tested every 3 months. And if you're pregnant, you're deported. So if you want a way to get the number of people having children down, that's a direct way. And it means the poor are not having children, at least not having children in Singapore. It's an extreme country, but if we're looking at what happens to rich countries that become dramatically more unequal, Singapore is the model. It matters to me because a few people in Britain are saying that London should try to be like Singapore, which on the face of it, Singapore looks highly successful until you look beneath what actually happens there. Just going to zoom through some infant mortality rates for you, just to give you the sort of potted history of it. The numbers are all there on the screen, but essentially we've had this cascade down. So the interesting thing to look at is, when has the rate of change been faster and when has it been slower? It used to be that it was the 1960s that we had the fastest reduction in infant mortality worldwide. It now looks like it is now, possibly now, again depending on the collection of data by the internet in Africa. a huge amount of very good work getting babies immunised at a very early age and worrying about deaths from diarrhoea and so on. But with the complication of the Gates Foundation, which is massive, kind of jumping on something they want to take all the credit for. It's interesting being slightly sceptical of the Gates Foundation. For instance, the United Nations is producing a report next month about the effects of inequality on pollution, how much carbon people produce. In rich countries, the more equal countries, people tend to pollute far less on average than the more unequal countries. So if everybody polluted the same as in the US, we need four planets. If they pollute the same as in Japan, we still need two, but it's a big, big difference. For that report, there was a proposal to put in a quote from Bill Gates when he was asked in Davos in January, is there a problem with inequality? And Bill Gates simply replied, what do you want, North Korea? As if the only alternative to inequality was North Korea. That quote cannot appear in a UN document because after the United States, the biggest funder of the United Nations is Bill Gates. I was trying not to say anything else about the Gates Foundation, but we're living in a time when a few, and the nicer philanthropists, are still dominating what we do. Here are the rates going down in the UK. This is worldwide. More recently, and the projections from the UN. So you're getting to a point when you really are expecting your children to survive. The rates of survival matter immensely because it alters how many children you may have. And this is a very staccato process. You're not talking about having an extra half child. It's either a whole one or not a whole one. And when we look at the intentions of people and what they say, we can see this great shift in how many children women say they want to have. Often they're ending up having one less than the actual number that they said they wanted to have. The other big trend, of course, happening in rich countries is to have no children. A quarter of us will have no children. And that is fairly new. We had it in the past, and we had it partly by sponsoring monasteries and nunneries. We actually had places, you know, designed for people to go not to have children. We're coming back to that again, but we have no model of how do you get a cohesive society when, for one quarter of the population, why should you pay tax for schools because you don't have children who are going to go to school? You now see bumper stickers in the United States saying no school taxes, which is particularly short-sighted. A couple of maps for you because I'm coming from the geography department. And this is out of date now. This is 2005 and it's gone down. This is the average fertility rate of different parts of Turkey. Istanbul is way below London now in the number of children being had. It's only the remote rural east of the country where it's at all high and the population there is very low. Here's Iran. And this is what I mean by the emancipation of women. The power of what's happened worldwide is strong enough to have meant that those in charge in Iran, there's a little bit of a bounce back this year, but in general, they haven't managed to hold back the desire of the vast majority of women to want less than 2.2 children per woman. Over half the world is at below fertility replacement level, below 2.1 children. And that half is where I've been saying this for about 5 years, and it isn't half anymore, it's more than half. This is again a Hans Rosling graphic, but made static and black and white. It does actually work. It's a challenge trying to take what he does and make it static. So these little dots are countries over time. This is 1980, this is Niger now in 2009. Average number of women per children per woman. And the life expectancy of the country. And in general, as life expectancy rises, the number of children people have goes down. But you get these occasional flips. That's the United Kingdom. This causes enormous panic. We don't have enough primary schools in London now, which I think is more to do with our politics and our inability to build primary schools and the increased birth rate. The United States, and Russia also doing odd things. But that gets a lot of attention. The overall trend gets much less attention. Here's the fertility rates for different continents. So this is what we know up to 2013 happened, and this is what's predicted. And the interesting thing here is to watch the plummeting that occurred everywhere but Africa. If Africa had plummeted at the same rate as the other continents, you'd be looking at a very different future world projection. It's gone down, but not as fast. The other interesting thing to look at is that the UN, because it was forced to produce these long-term projections, simply assumes that everywhere is going to go to 2 children per woman. There are very good reasons to believe that this isn't simply going to stop at 2, that it is going to stop somewhere between 1 and 2. And if it stops nearer to 1, a 1 is a halving of human population size every generation. That's very important. The baby milk quote. I mean, this, again, something somebody with some expertise could look at. This is probably the right country to look at it, given it's Nestle, who's the company involved, and others. You'll know that Nestle got into trouble for dressing up people in nurses' uniforms and selling baby milk powder in Africa. One of the unforeseen effects of it, apart from it not being good for children's health, is that you're more likely to become pregnant again faster if you're not breastfeeding. And it's possible a small part of this rise is to do with that. A larger part of the rise will be due to this. Here's Africa, the dotted line at the bottom. This is 10-year change in GDP. And the key thing is that in the 80s and 90s, the whole continent of Africa was in a massive recession, of the kind that gets a lot of attention if it's a worldwide recession of rich countries since 2008, but didn't get so much. So at the time when Africa was not doing that plummeting of fertility as fast as the other continents had done, it was also struggling with rising absolute rates of poverty and immiseration in the continent. Here's the population growth estimates from the UN. These are all the wiggly things that have happened. And then the demographers kind of smooth them all off and head them all towards 0% change. We know that in China, fertility before the one-child policy came in 10 years, had dropped from 6 children per woman to just above 2. There was a rapid reduction before the one-child policy. We now know that as it's being relaxed, people, particularly in the cities, are erring towards one child rather than 2, even when given a choice. We don't look at big Asian cities as a model for the future, because we are based in North America and Europe, I think is the... And if we're based in North America and Europe, the only place we can look at is Barcelona for being the one city which has a fertility rate which is similar to many large Asian cities. There are lots of other factors that are going to matter for what happens with fertility and population change in the future. A big one's going to be migration. When people migrate, they tend to have fewer children than they would have had if they'd stayed in the poorer area that they tend to have come from. These are generalizations. They tend to have fewer children. So if you allow migration, you reduce the population total in the world. However, in the place they turn up in, say London, they tend to have slightly, and you're talking less than half, but slightly more children than the population who are already there, for one generation only. These figures come from the Office of Budget Responsibility for Britain, and they're all about the national debt of the country. And this is what would happen to the national debt. Our national debt is currently the equivalent of Greece's. It's really bad. It's very, very big. It's just that we have long-term bonds. So it didn't look like we were going to go bankrupt in 2009-10 that much. But we had a debt as big, proportionately to our GDP, as Greece.